Next case of the morning, Santos versus United States. Mr. Benson.
Yes. Philip Benson for the United States from the Northern District of Indiana.
You're a brave man.
Thank you. I hope I'm a successful one. I stand before the court today asking the United States, ask this court to reverse its decision in United States versus Scialaba, in which it held that the term proceeds in the money laundering statute means profits and not proceeds or gross revenue. Since Scialaba was decided, as this court's very well aware of, there have been two other circuits to weigh in on the path that this circuit has chosen to take.
Not exactly. First of all, you present a lineup of circuit cases that resolve the issue differently, but most of those cases were available to the court when we decided Scialaba. Of the two post-Scialaba cases, Iacoboni, merely relies on that circuit merely relies on its prior holding in Hurley, which was a case that was available to the Scialaba court. So what we're really left with is a single circuit decision, Grasso, and from the Third Circuit. And I don't quite understand why a single circuit decision should cause us to reconsider our prior case in a total disregard of stare decisis for us.
If I tend to disagree with the court a little bit about what Iacoboni really was doing. I agree with the court that they followed their holding that they originally had used to define proceeds under the RICO statute.
Well, what the court did was it noted our decision in Scialaba and stated that it had already held in United States versus Hurley that the term proceeds was not limited to net profits. And as I said before, the Hurley case was available at the time Scialaba was written. So truly, Iacoboni adds nothing new to this mix. Grasso does.
Under Grasso, we believe that the analysis that Grasso goes through of what the definition of proceeds is and how you arrive at that was much more thorough and much more expansive than what this court did when it decided Scialaba. If you look at the opinion in Scialaba, there's almost no discussion about the history or dictionary meanings of what the word proceeds is. It was a rather blanket statement that, of course, people know that this means net profits or profits, but there was no analysis as to what the dictionary meanings were. There was certainly no analysis as to how it related to other potential statutes, which certainly the definition of the RICO statute isn't binding on the court in trying to determine what proceeds means in the money laundering context. But I think it's something that you would acknowledge is at least worth looking at in terms of trying to define what the court meant in the money laundering statute when they use proceeds.
You know, in the brief you talked of issues of proof in establishing whether money is net profits. But is that problem apparent in this record? Because if no attempt was made to establish net profits in these cases, I mean, I'm just wondering if they're the best cases for you to present your challenge.
Well, in this case, there is evidence that the defendant kept some records. But in this case, what Scialaba forces the government to do in every promotion money laundering case is not just that there are some records, but to determine from records what are the profits of the business. That's very hard in a regular business, not an illegitimate business, because when does a revenue becomes a become a profit. If I am a drug dealer and I get $10,000 from a sale of cocaine, and I now take that money and I put it in a bank account for, or I put it on my mattress for 6 months, is that now a profit? I don't know. When does a revenue or the total amount gained from an illegal transaction become a profit? So if that money sits there in my house for 6 months, and then I turn around and buy more cocaine, or I buy a car to drive in the drug business, have I spent a profit, or was that just revenue? That's the hurdle that Scialaba places, and the United States believes unreasonably, on trying to assign, in essence, an accounting determination to illegal enterprises. It is impossible.
One of the problems, of course, we have here is, as Judge Rovner points out, is that we do have stare decisis. The record shows that our court split down the middle on this. You know, that to go take that in bank was a 5-5 vote. The
two of us are on the...
I know.
and I also, as the author of the Phoebus case, it wasn't discussed, and it's all the same people that mm-hmm. we've got here. And so we have those things. But one of the things that was brought up was that I think the justification for Scialaba is that you don't get charged twice under money laundering and for the conviction for whatever they're doing, gambling or something. Now, as I understand in the prohibition against illegal gambling, they do refer to one part that says... has been or remains substantially continuous operation for a period in excess of 30 days or has gross revenue of $2,000 in any single day. Gross revenue, $2,000 in any single day. And that's it, as I understand it. That's the extent. If it's $200,000, it doesn't seem to matter. That's gambling.
The gambling offense would be complete upon the fulfillment of either one of those conditions.
But it doesn't matter how much.
No.
And money laundering graduates up the more there that is involved, does it not?
In terms of the sentence that can be imposed? Yes, it could. But I think
understand that the penalty here does not under just
well, the penalty under the guidelines would not, but I think under now the advisory nature of the guidelines, someone who engages in a gambling enterprise and rakes in $1 million is going to be punished differently by a district court than someone who brings in $2,000.
Based on discretion.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, we're after that fact now, obviously. But this is where is the context we take this in. So it is a difficult internal and external situation, and I guess that's what we have to determine here. We have different people on the court. And I don't know the answer, but I understand what you're trying to do. But it is one of these things that we have to deal with.
The government has no illusions that we're fighting an uphill battle to have this court resolve the issue.
You know, you call into question not only Scialaba, but also Masters in Genova as well. And it seems to me that if our circuit was so far off base with all of those decisions that Congress, the Supreme Court, or, even this court sitting en banc would, be trying to alter the landscape.
And that's sort of what the government asked for in Scialaba, and due to I think one of the judges having to abstain, they were unable to climb that hurdle. But in response to your specific question, is if you look at Masters, Masters predicated their position that under the RICO statute, that proceeds meant profits. They predicated that because they assumed that something was intimated in Russello. I'm reading from Masters. The statute is designed to force criminals to disgorge the ill-gotten gains. We may assume, therefore, as intimated in Russello, that the proceeds to which the statute refers to are net, not gross revenues. So they're relying on Russello. If you read Russello, the footnote in Russello says, in ruling today, we recognize that we have not resolved any ambiguity that might be inherent in terms of profits and proceeds. Our use of those terms are not intended to suggest a particular means of calculating the precise amount that is subject to RICO forfeiture in any given case. I'll let this court decide whether Masters was properly interpreting what Russello was saying. Because it seems to say Russello was saying that in Masters, but when you read the footnote in Russello, it doesn't. It says we're not deciding this issue. But in Masters, this court relied upon Russello. And I think there needs to be a close examination. But if you also look at the RICO statute itself, it says exactly in the legislature's history that we are not using the words proceeds because that creates too big a difficult a burden to prove a violation. We're not using the word profits. I mean, that's verbatim in our brief. That was the legislative history. That was never mentioned in the decision in Masters to say that under the RICO statute, proceeds means profits. That should have been addressed, I believe, in Masters. And I think the court has to look at Masters very hard in terms of whether or not it still should be the law. So I thank you very much for your time.
So who we have next here?
Yeah, we're splitting the time, Your Honor.
I know. Who are you?
I'm Brian Werner.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representing Mr. Diaz, my colleague Paul Jefferson is representing Mr. Santos. I'll address the practical problems and policy considerations, and Mr. Jefferson will address the statutory construction arguments. What the government is seeking to do here, as they say, is to overturn the Scalaba decision, which was based upon the well-founded concern. Those are words, again, from the government's well-placed concern. Those are words from the government's opening brief, to avoid an overlap between the underlying offense and and money laundering. And Scalaba resolved this concern by determining that the word proceeds means net profits.
Well, is that concern in Scalaba the concern with avoiding overlap between promotional money laundering and the underlying criminal offense a non-issue, as Mr. Benson suggests, because money laundering includes a preliminary requirement that there be two separate transactions, one that creates the illegal proceeds and one in which the proceeds are either concealed or spent to promote illegal activity?
Judge Roemer, I do not think that the existing case law, the pre-existing case law in this circuit addressed that before we got to Scalaba. They say there has to be, the government says there has to be two distinct transactions. But what they rely on that for is a series of concealment, money laundering concealment cases, where it may be easier, in fact, to show, that's the Esterman case, the Reynolds case, maybe easier, in fact, to show that there is a predicate offense and a money laundering transaction. But when it comes to a case of promotional money laundering, which is the Scalaba case, which is the Diaz and Santos case, it's merely semantics. You cannot realistically distinguish the payment of a salary, which is what happened here, or the payment to bettors, which is what happened in the Scalaba case. In fact, the government admitted an oral argument in the Scalaba case that the automated payment to bettors in a slot machine would not constitute proceeds, would not constitute money laundering. And that's the reason the court decided to define proceeds as net profits. And the government has not given this court any compelling reason, which they're required to under the law of the circuit, to overturn the decision and upset stare decisis. Further, the Grasso and Iacoboni cases do not present such a compelling reason either. They do not address this concern that we're talking about, this well-placed concern about statutory overlap. Next, they present a series of practical problems, but as Judge Roemer brought up, there's the Masters and Genova cases. Masters has been on the books since 1991. If these practical problems that the government hypothetically poses does not give any concrete examples about, but if such a problem would happen in the criminal context from a net profits reading of the word proceeds, perhaps it would have come up in the Masters or the Genova context, or perhaps the government could cite in the money laundering context a concrete example. Instead, what we have are what we're asking the court to do, what they're asking the court to do, is overrule not only the Skialaba case from 4 years ago, but the Masters case from 15 years ago and the Genova case from 3 years ago now. And frankly, that's not on this record, on these briefs, that's not warranted. They also pose practical problems of the sort of proof that would be required by the government to show net profits. The
Would that be an arbitrary determination? Because when they talk about in the gambling statute, they just talk about gross revenues, which some say that would be the solution. Just put gross proceeds, I guess, as opposed to discerning. We don't have any accounting principles that we apply here. And if somebody hires somebody and pays them on the cheap, like maybe these guys did, or say, well, we'll just pay $100,000, that's an expense, and therefore it's not a profit.
Two quick points before I think I have to cede to my colleague. First of all, in this case, on the facts of this case that the court is being asked to decide, in the Diaz and Santos case, there's a treasure trove of financial records where the government could determine the gross revenue of the operation and then deduct the expenses to get to the net profits. Further, the government has admitted that, or as it said in their brief, that it is a quintessential financial crime, money laundering. And a jury is more than capable of understanding the difference, in my view, between gross and net. Thank you, Your Honor.
Just judges aren't.
Judges.
No.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Jefferson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Paul Jefferson. I represent Mr. Santos. In addition to the able arguments from Mr. Diaz's counsel, I would like to raise two additional points. First, the construction of proceeds as net income is the correct one. And second of all, the rule of lenity requires a net profits interpretation. As to the first point, this Court's prior construction of the term proceeds in the money laundering statute is correct. Skialaba was correctly concerned about the rationale of that decision. And in addition to the issues related to the overlap in terms of fundamental fairness, I also think it relates to the statutory construction issue. Specifically, for the money laundering statute to have an independent meaning other than the illegal gambling statute and not simply be a way to enhance the sentence for illegal gambling, it should have a net profits interpretation or a net proceeds interpretation as opposed to a gross receipts. It is difficult to imagine how a conviction for illegal gambling under a gross receipts interpretation wouldn't automatically include a money laundering context if a gross receipts interpretation were applied. And so for the statute to be independent and have its own separate distinct meaning, a net profits determination or net proceeds determination should apply there. In addition, and as Your Honor mentioned earlier, the statutory construction issue in Skialaba is consistent with the other circuits' treatment in terms of how the RICO statutes, the forfeiture provisions, are interpreted. The other circuits who have reached that issue have also relied on the RICO forfeiture provisions, and this court did in Skialaba and should continue to do so. As to the second point regarding the rule of lenity, the rule of lenity requires proceeds to be defined as net income. The rule of lenity instructs that ambiguity in the meaning of a statutory provision be construed in favor of the defendant. The rule applies when a reasonable doubt persists about a statute's intended scope. Mr. Santos and Mr. Diaz will argue that and assert that there's no question here in terms of net income, but if there were, it seems that there's an ambiguity that should be resolved in favor of the defendants. Specifically, the government admitted the ambiguity in terms of the language of the statute in heading 2 of its reply brief, where it said, "The primary meaning of proceeds is gross receipts, which is presumably the meaning Congress intended." What the rule of lenity does is assert that if we have to presume what the meaning is, we should presume so on the basis in favor of the defendant. In addition, the circuits are not split as to the lack of clarity in the statutory language. To paraphrase from the Grasso opinion, Section 1956 does not define a proceeds. Viewed in a vacuum, we discern no clear meaning of the term. Congress might easily have used gross receipts if it so intended, but it just might as easily have used the term profits. So in terms of the language of the statute, at best, from the government's perspective, there's an ambiguity and the rule of lenity applies.
Where's your client now?
He's, I believe he's here today.
He's
Your
not
Honor.
In prison.
No, he's not, Your Honor.
Okay. And what is the, what was the extent of the reduction with this?
I believe...
underlying whatever it was, gambling?
Yeah, for the underlying offense, he was sentenced to 60 months. For the money laundering, he was sentenced to 210 months. I believe due to delays, procedural delays in the Cialaba case, he's obviously served his time for the underlying offense and would have a significant enhancement if he were required to go back. In addition, the government admits that there's no clear definition of proceeds, and respectfully, the order of dictionary definitions or relying on definitions from civil context, well, I don't think answer the question anyway. Certainly, you know, pales in comparison to the overlap concerns and the other statutory construction arguments at play in Cialaba. And finally, I would just like to point out the practical issue, which Your Honor alluded to earlier, which is just the enhancement that's in play if net proceeds or net profits isn't involved. In this particular case for Mr. Santos, it would be approximately 15 to 18 years of additional sentencing for the same underlying facts, which the government conceded can now be dealt with in terms of the recent developments in this sentencing guideline case law.
You mean not being confined by the guidelines?
Could Correct, Your Honor.
For if it were a large amount, you know, you just refer to revenue, gross revenue of $2,000. They say gross revenue. Then if it were a couple of $1 million, that the court could reasonably go above that. That's what you're saying?
Correct, Your Honor. I see my time has expired. May I briefly answer your question? Your Honor, my point is simply this, that if that to the extent that could be argued that money laundering protects against the biggest illegal gamblers that may exist, that argument's no longer relevant because the sentencing guidelines can deviate based on the amount of legal gambling that was occurring.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks. Your time expired, I guess. Is that correct? Okay, well then, this case will be taken under advisement.